This is Drinking Wine Talking Tech. I'm Jonathan Reichenthal.
And I'm Tom O'Malley.
Well, this is season three.
This is exciting.
What do you think?
Usually we have one guest at a time. We've got a few guests in the room with us.
We do. We have amazing people from, I think, the city of Sacramento and the state of California and probably from all over the place.
Should we do some introductions? Maybe we start on the left here.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Okay.
So when we were talking in season two, I told you we were going to take this thing live. We were going to put it in front of a live audience, and you kind of laughed at me. I said, really?
We were deep into bottle two at that time.
Yes. He doesn't, when we're drinking, he doesn't really take anything I say seriously. I think that's true.
Well, we usually do this at the end of the day. All right. So this is something like after a long, exhausting day, we'll get together literally in the basement of my office, and we'll hear, you know, footsteps above us, and we're ready to unwind. You know, so to getting that cork out of the bottle is just an exciting thing. Today we're not drinking, but maybe we can do some whining.
We could. There's some stuff that. But I'm an optimist.
Yeah,
I prefer not to whine.
What about RFPs or something? Can't we just pick something that we can all agree that needs to go away?
You'd agree, right? Yeah. The bane of our lives is public servants. That's true. So what's the show about? Why do we actually do the show?
You know, for me, I don't know about you, but I just like to drink.
Well, and I love wine.
Yeah.
So that's two things which are positive.
Yeah.
But it's really because, so first of all, I spent a career in technology.
Yeah.
Spent a good deal of my career in the private sector. Now I'm doing very humbling work in the public sector. But we're, you know, we live and work in Palo Alto, you know, where a lot of tech is happening.
It's pretty exciting.
And you're an entrepreneur. You're running a startup, you know, real time during the show.
Yeah, and you know, along the way, though, I think I'm a humanist overall, though. Like, I'm a technologist, but I think the reason why we do this show is because it's about enhancing humans.
Good.
Yeah. So that whole bots working for bots, I'm not buying it.
You're not buying it.
No.
Well, and it's interesting because people are fascinated all around the world in what's going on in California, and particularly in Silicon Valley. I mean, it's a pretty unique place, right?
Yeah, entirely. Particularly that Rosewood Hotel at the top of Sand Hill Road.
Yes.
Yeah, it gets write-ups.
If Tom will tell you the stories about that later
offline,
on, if you're interested.
Offline.
So I gave this sort of wide-ranging presentation today, covered a lot of stuff. What spoke to you? What jumped out to you?
Well, gang, I'm really into knowledge.
Yeah.
And I think we've been in the information era. I think this last industrialization, or as you called it, that era is going to be defined by information. And so what I'm sort of all abuzz about is the idea that we're running out of information. I know that sounds weird.
But running out?
Yeah, I mean, think about this. Think about, like, the world speeding up. Remember that last graph that you showed?
Yeah.
Well, as things start arcing like that, it's like, how long is a white paper good for? 10 minutes? Like, if our content, if the shelf life of information is condensing, like, things speed up, information
right.
condenses. So that's sort of what I've been thinking a lot about is that, you know, because explicit information's not infinite,
yeah.
right? The Google's a great modern day Dewey Decimal System for what's explicit. But what I'm into is, like, how do we get into the tacit? Because tacit knowledge is infinite, it's ever changing, it's ever moving. And so that's what I've been thinking about, usually after some wine.
I think you make a very good point. I mean,
yeah.
This idea of permanency is no longer permanent.
Yeah.
So everything's flowing, everything's streaming, right?
Exactly.
Tell me about blockchain. You think it's nonsense? You think there's something to it?
I think distributed ledger is a really important asset to humankind. I think blockchain is still a word, and actually it's a technology that's too closely associated with the cryptocurrencies and Bitcoin.
Yes.
And that's just a different discussion. And I'm an optimist on that as well. But distributed ledger, I mean, I worked for Oracle for 7 years. I mean, I know database and I know its limitations.
They do databases.
They do a couple of databases, yeah. Yeah. And you know, now they're all of a sudden the world's largest cloud provider. It's amazing how Larry does that. Just it's all done overnight. But yeah, I think that the idea for the merits that you mentioned earlier, right? The security, the reliability, and I think when I think about, like, its biggest impact, it's probably in the government and education realm.
Hmm. Yeah, in the near term, potentially.
Yeah, because you're just dealing with extreme numbers there, and the technology is really designed for extreme numbers.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I agree. I mean, I showed a list in my presentation of sort of repositories that everybody, I think, could you know, would resonate with everybody.
Yeah.
For the fact that one of the things we do quite well in government is we collect and store data. And we want to make sure people can trust it, that the data hasn't been meddled with, that it is harder to hack. We want to reduce that. And we want to have that almost infinite audit trail of what happened to the data during its transaction.
Yeah, but right? Then you get this GDPR, right? And the main essence of GDPR is that you need to be able to delete the data. So there's a direct conflict with where the technology is going and where regulation's heading in that regard.
Yeah.
So just by show of applause, and it's okay to be pro-GDPR because there's a lot of good things going on about data privacy that's trying to accomplish. By applause only, no hissing or booing, please. Just how many folks think GDPR is a good thing? Okay, that was...
And then let me just, it's general data protection regulations.
Did you hear Yanni or Laurel just then?
Yanni is the only thing I've heard.
Okay. Actually, we kept playing it on the car ride up here from Palo Alto last night, and we were in vehement disagreement.
Great. So I'm going to sign, just go a little bit back from the mic.
Oh, okay.
But you're good?
I'm too intense, my wife tells me
that. Good. Our producer just... indicated there we need to back off. That's good. Okay, cool.
Some mic hygiene.
Did we?
No, I want to do
question.
The opposite.
The opposite
yeah.
question.
So,
yeah.
How many folks think that GDPR is a step in the wrong direction?
Oh.
Ooh. Here's what I saw. I saw some hand waving. Like I want to, but I don't want to be the only guy.
Yeah. Okay. By the way, it's audio. It's podcast. People can't see.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I was waving my hands.
You were waving your hands.
Yeah, as if I was a dealer walking away from a.
If we kind of, if we sort of even step up another notch in terms of the trends that I was demonstrating this morning or talking about, you know, one of the things I think that's hardest for all of us, including myself, I think for you too, is just making sense of it, putting it in context with your life, with your organization. What's some tips for making sense of all?
Just like keeping up with it.
I guess.
I mean, can you imagine like how if it's tough keeping up with this stuff when you're living in downtown Palo Alto, you're in a tech company. I mean, I can't imagine how people stay up to date on.
How do you keep up?
I tell you what I don't do is I don't answer my phone when we're recording.
There you go. It's really live now.
Yeah, I'm falling behind, you see? But, I mean, seriously, I think there's a reason why the word FOMO didn't exist like 5 years ago or whatever. I think that there is an up-and-coming or a distress that both companies and individuals are feeling about falling behind. I said FOMO.
FOMO.
Yes. I did say FOMO.
You did.
Okay. Yes. What do you think? You don't agree?
I do. I struggle.
Yeah.
And I'm a person who is all over social
You're
media.
Everywhere.
I read blogs and articles and books.
Yeah.
And I struggle. To make sense of it. I've really enjoyed sort of beginning to think about it in the context now of a fourth industrial revolution. I do think that starts to help. It's a framing for what's happening. The framing of the big changes. The impacts of those changes in every part of our lives, you know.
So heavy.
It is heavy. Too heavy.
Yeah, we need to balance this out with some less heavy. What do we got that's less heavy?
So when I played the audio yesterday for Yanni versus Laurel, we both heard Yanni
at first,
but then you heard Laurel,
and I couldn't get off Laurel. That sounded just horrible. I was with Yanni, and anyway, there were witnesses.
That's right, and. But I continue to hear Yanni.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, anyway.
Something like that, by the way, none of us would have known about or cared about just a few years ago. This is technology at scale.
Yeah.
Right? The world was talking about this within an hour or two.
It was kind of insane, right? Even the New York Times site crashed with all the people trying to download it last night.
It did.
Or trying to listen to it, yeah.
Now, you and I talk about a lot of this stuff, and it's easy, actually, to think that we can be pessimistic about it. But both of us are... optimists, right? We're real.
I'm a humanist. Like I honestly believe that all things are getting better. I mean, you have to acknowledge that 750 million that you said is no small potatoes. Like, just because it's getting better doesn't mean it's great. But I mean, everything you said on your keynote there, that, you know, the quality of life, the lifespan itself, all those things, even crime. I mean, you'd think by watching the news every day, you'd think that the world's coming to an end, but it's actually statistically getting better in so many ways.
It is, and in every category.
Yeah, and it's accelerating.
Now, we've been thinking about this a lot, and one of our thoughts is that this is a great time to lead.
Yeah.
What? Tell us, maybe introduce that idea.
Yeah, so I think there's a gap. I think people are still, you know, social media sort of is maxed out. I think the idea of broadcasting and eyeball media has sort of reached a point where it's discrediting itself. I call it truth decay. What do you think of that one?
That's a great hashtag.
I kind of like it. So
truth decay.
I think there's a truth decay going on, and I think that there's an opportunity for folks that are brave enough to start stepping forward and having real dialogue. I think we've gotten away from dialogue, transparency. Those things aren't as sexy and fun, but that's actually what drives real change and impacts real people and creates credible insights. And I think, as we said earlier, when you increase the fact of truth decay and on top of the shelf life of information, what we've got is a reliable source, the web, is deteriorating. It's losing value faster than we actually acknowledge today. And so I think there's new ways to create really credible outcomes, like doing a podcast with bottles of wine. Now, I think there are other ways. I think it's as simple as, like, town halls are really important. Mm-hmm. And creating human and documenting human interactions and being willing to record certain events, being willing to provide that click through all the way down. It's that transparency. It will always be the source of credibility.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
You know, there's two types of Tom O'Malley's. There's the guy at night when we're tired after work.
Yeah.
And then there's this guy who's had a couple of coffees in the morning.
This is the Starbucks Tom.
I never heard this guy before.
Yeah, I get a little excited about it. Yeah.
I like it. I think that's pretty awesome. You shared some great insights there. So you work on the private side of the economy, the private sector. I work on the public. I'll talk about the public in a second. But what are your customers doing in response to some of these trends?
Yeah, so, I mean, my startup is about creating more credible, it's a authentic engagement platform, and these companies use it for creating insights with panels of experts, and they use it for private research, like qualitative research, and they get to talk to like 20 experts, oftentimes be anonymous, but it's a really sort of first-hand learning experience. And a lot of these companies, that's a new thing. They're used to like hiding behind cubes, and now companies are starting to get out more, and they're starting to realize they can't have a fortress type environment. They need to open it up and break down the walls, and that's, you physically see the open workspace occurring in major companies. They're literally ripping out the cubes now because they realize that they've got to create a whole other level of transparency and dialogue. So what we see is companies that have been really conservative, like Procter & Gamble, like GE, they're at a point where they're forced. They are absolutely forced to change their ways. And unfortunately, you know, the pendulum needs to swing really hard in one direction until that gets people thinking new. But yeah, change is happening at a revolutionary pace in large enterprise today.
Right. If you're just tuning in, this is Drinking Wine, Talking Tech. You realize this is live, right?
I'm still Tom O'Malley. Yeah, and the phones are open, folks.
That's right. Dial in. I haven't told Tom, this is recorded and not live.
Yeah.
So
right.
He thinks it's live. On the public side of things, first of all, this is rather, a lot of this is overwhelming.
Yeah.
I mean, I think we can all acknowledge that we are writing policy as we go, often behind the trend, right? So the trend happens, we respond. You know, I'm a person who thinks and researches and works in the transportation space. I didn't see scooters happening. I never anticipated scooters. That thing just happened overnight, and now we're scrambling.
Yeah, it was like a two-week period. I went up to San Francisco, no scooter in sight. 2 weeks later, now they're just littered everywhere. Yeah,
and that's just emblematic, I think, of as city leaders and government leaders, this type of catch-up. Right?
Yeah.
It happens fast. Now we're responding.
I mean, how did we miss Bitcoin, dude? We're all of our friends are. I have friends weigh into it. I'm at Copa Cafe. I can see when I go to swipe my card, it says, or you can pay with, you know, 15 Bitcoin. 4 years ago, 5 years ago, and all I'm thinking to myself is, oh, I feel so cool. I'm in a coffee shop that has Bitcoin in it. Why wasn't I buying it? Like, what's wrong with me?
If our friends were.
Yeah. Anyhow. But yeah,
sometimes it's right
under
your nose.
Yeah, it really is, yeah.
So I often think then, okay, so we know that.
Yeah.
Well, what are we missing right now? What's happening in 6 months from now that we're going to miss if we don't look in the right ways at the right places?
There's a healthy pause that I think people in our audience today and people in your role, Jonathan, they need to take. I mean, the stakes are so high.
Yeah.
Like, there's nothing wrong with throwing $1,000 into Bitcoin when it first comes out. But if you're a government, it's not necessarily, you're not playing those sort of long tail bets. Right?
Well, let me even address that. I think you talk to a cultural core, which is, and we're we don't have a propensity towards risk, right? You might,
for a lot of good reasons,
for the right reasons, largely. I think what this fourth industrial revolution allows us to do is take a little bit more risk, or if it, not that it allows us. Let me rephrase that. It forces us to take a little bit more risk, to experiment more. We have to have living labs. And I found that useful in the city of Palo Alto. I don't want to go all in, invest. You know, I take the taxpayers' money very seriously. And so we have to be careful in what we do. But we also have to do some of it. And we have to do more of it now that we're...
So, like, give an example of a lab that you've... a small thing, sandbox-type idea that you've dabbled in.
Well, we're very interested in the Internet of Things.
Yeah.
We're interested in, you know, having a sensor network in the city, and you can do lots of things. You can detect the quality of air, right? And then, you know, we can have academics at different universities research that. So we do it on a small scale. We'll do one or two blocks of sensors. We're not going to do sensors for the whole city. We're experimenting with traffic counting around City Hall. And because it's a place where we can not only it's close by, right? So we can actually show people the technology. We can tweak it if we have to because it's close at hand. But we do it on a small scale, and so we can see, we can collect sufficient data to make it meaningful, and you know, then we use that to inform our decisions.
Yeah.
So we have a series of those appropriately sized living lab experiments, and I would encourage cities all over the country and in California to do more for that.
I wonder if it's taking more risk or just being more, like, in tune. Like, for example, you know, when things happen slower, cities might have moved at this threshold of mainstreamness.
Yeah.
But now that thresholds are coming so faster, it's almost like a challenge, as we said, sort of challenge to stay abreast. You don't necessarily need to move faster on the curve, but the time allotment is shrinking.
It does seem to be that way.
Yeah.
There seems to be less time.
Yeah.
Is there less time?
There's definitely less time.
Okay.
Yeah.
You're going to ask me a question.
You know, usually...
I interrupted you.
No. I was going to ask you. Yeah. I'm just curious. It just popped in my head.
Is it? You know there's people here, right?
You're going to take... You're going to let me wing it? No, so I'm wondering, because I go into San Francisco in particular, and there's a lot of homeless folks. It's really sad.
Yeah.
Like, no one's really sad.
Yeah.
And then from a city standpoint, you know, if we're judging ourselves by our weakest and not by our strongest, what are we doing? How can technology help that? Have you heard any innovations that can help? Maybe some of the gig economy. Is this potential to give? Can cities start? Like, I think I'd heard something, read something, somebody else's podcast that actually was informative.
Sure.
Had something on it around cities hiring the homeless for, like, cleanup and such. Is that a mentality that's starting to come in, or what's happening?
Yeah, look, that is a tough question.
Yeah.
I don't claim to be any type of expert. There are smart, good people working on this. One of the ways I could kind of think about it as a technologist would be at more of the source, because homelessness is an outcome to something, right? So what is the source? Is there insufficient economic opportunities for a segment of society?
I think it's New York. I think New York was the original source. They just sent everybody out here.
Well, you look at, for example, mental disease, right?
Yeah.
And computer science will help us create better medication,
true,
which can help people. So we need to apply algorithms and big data and AI to improving medical innovation.
Yeah.
So the economics, medicine.
Yeah.
These are areas that technology can help.
Yeah.
Later on today, I'll be in the car. I'll think of a better answer. But right
well,
now,
I mean,
that's what I have.
I think you nailed it. I mean, I really think that the point is solutions come from so many different areas, so many different technologies. You may be looking at a problem and thinking it has nothing to do with drones, and then all of a sudden it does. So back to you. How do you keep up? What do you read?
Yeah, I don't think I really keep up is the answer. I love Twitter.
Yeah.
I know you and I talk about this
a
lot.
I just don't get it yet.
You don't get
okay.
it? I get it. Yeah. I've got it for a while. You have to figure out if it has a place in your life.
Yeah.
But I find it's a great source of knowledge. I like to follow people who are thinking about the things I'm thinking about. And by the way, I love to follow people who don't agree with me, who have a completely different opinion.
Yeah, you're kind of weird like that. You're one of the first guys in a long time that I've met that loves when somebody disagrees. You're kind of like, hey, well, maybe I'm wrong.
And you know, you got to do that.
Yeah,
I don't
you're
know
really
why
good at it, actually.
Why are people so reluctant to listen to an alternative point of view?
Yeah.
Even if you don't agree. Even if you hate that point of view.
Right.
Hey, by the way, so we got great people in this room.
We do.
There's amazing items going to happen for the rest of the day.
We're getting giveaways, raffles? You're going to give them the shirt off your back?
Yeah. actually, maybe the vendors are doing this. There's 100 vendors
idea.
Here doing
That's
No,
right.
but you had a great idea. What would you recommend to folks in this room to do for the rest of today that would be really valuable?
Yeah, so I think it's all connected to the knowledge thing. You guys got to build your knowledge as fast as possible. When I first started my career, I was doing government and education sales for Quest Communication in California, and I was working with the state schools and doing OC3s and DS3s. And one thing I realized is when I'm trying to sell, when I was back then, this is like 20 years ago, selling to the government, people weren't that engaging. They weren't asking us a lot of questions. And quite frankly, I felt maybe it's because we always come across as salespeople, and no one really wants to get in that uncomfortable sort of discussion where you feel like you're being sold to. What I'd say is push past that, and you are going to get sold to, of course. But the information that those tech companies have is just so valuable to you. And so power through the sales stuff and press them to give you the info that the way that you want to have it. So if it's a Gantt chart about a process or a best practice, they have so much resource, and they as companies are developing so much content and knowledge on their subjects, and you just got to tell them, put it in my format and give it to me because I need it. And you do. You do need to know what everybody's doing. So I'd say lean in on the vendors in the other room and get the knowledge from them.
Hey, you know what? We've wasted another 20 minutes.
Yeah.
In our podcast today. How do you think that went?
Well, usually we record for an hour and then we edit down to 20 minutes. So there's not a lot on the cutting room floor here, which...
I don't think so.
Yeah. I can think of one comment, but that's about it.
I always make him look good. You know?
Yeah. Any parting words for you? I mean, there's some vendors in the room. From a government side, what should they do differently to maybe make that marriage better?
Yeah, I do think that the tech vendor community can sell better into government. And what I mean by that is a couple of meanings. One meaning I have is we need solutions.
Yeah.
More than ever.
Yeah.
The stakes have never been higher.
Yeah.
The challenges in our cities and in our agencies are significant, and so we need a lot more innovation. So I would encourage that. But you know, I sit on lots of panels and I go to lots of conferences, and folks will come up to me and they say, "Have you heard of such and such tech?" And I say, "No." I said, "You've never reached out to me. You haven't made an effort to call my office," or and you know, the vendors always kind of cringe because they're like, "Aren't we always spamming you with emails and stuff?" Well, do better. Do better, because there's a lot of CIOs around California who are listening, and we want to hear from them.
Yeah, maybe an approach with knowledge rather than a pitch would be more attractive.
Possibly,
huh?
Yeah. So this is—I think this has been pretty cool.
I enjoyed it. Yeah,
you did great.
Thanks, man. You did fantastic, didn't he?
Yeah. Thank you. That proves we have a live audience, which is really incredible. You can find out more about this podcast and all our podcasts on Facebook. By the way, facebook.com/drinkingwinetalkingtech.
Send us a bottle of wine as well. It's A-OK. Your favorite. And then we'll mention you on the next podcast.
If we remember. That's right. You can listen to this podcast and both previous seasons on iTunes and all your favorite podcast platforms. So, I'm Jonathan Reichenthal.
And I'm Tom O'Malley.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.